Shmuel Aleph Yud Zayin, Perek Pasuk Mem Hey, which is where David is about to kill.
Working? Yeah. All right. Let's read Pasuk Ches. Perek Chavah Pasuk Ches. Shomish Me'av De Shol Bayamahu. David was the know of the city of the Kohanim, and they were aware of this, I should say. There from the servants of Shaul, besides David that day, Netzar Lifnei Hashem, standing there before God, was an individual. Ushmo, one of the servants of Shaul, Ushmo, and his name was Doeg Adomi, Doeg the Edomite. Abir Haroi, the mightiest of the shepherds, Asher Lashaul. Of course, Rashi says here, Avi Haroim, Av Basin. He was the head of the court of Shaul, of the ecclesiastical courts of the Basin of Shaul HaMelech. Now, we've seen Doeg in the past already a couple of times, not in the Tanakh. This is the first time he appears in the Tanakh. He's appeared in the past in Rashi, and Midrashim will say that he was trying to stymie David in the past by coming up with that statement, well, David's from Moab, and therefore he shouldn't be allowed in the Klal Yisrael. And a couple of other, I think there's at least one other place in which the Medrash brings down that Doeg tried to get David in trouble with Shaul. However, this is the place where he appears first in Chazal and then Tanakh itself. Now, if you take a look here in the Malbim for a moment, the Malbim says it's on the next page. You have to turn to the next page. The Shema Ish. If you look past the Chesed and the Varshmo, Shema Ish Yisapir Shakoin Lo Nishmar Mnei Doeg. They were all convinced that Doeg was a very big tzaddik. And he was there, in fact, in Nob, obviously, to learn and to serve God. And therefore, Vizel La'os, the sign of that is, Shakoin La'ola Al-Dait Libo Kibarechu. The Kohen did not, first of all, Avimelech. Avimelech was not under Achimelech. Was that didn't know that David was running away, and therefore he wasn't thinking he had to hide the fact. But also says the Malbim said Magi Gamkin Rishas Doeg. This passage tells us the evil of Doeg. Sheyosham, he was there. Veshama ki David amar shol b'shlichus Shaul, and he urged David saying that he was going in the mission of Shaul. V'chol says Hilshin es Hakoyim b'sheker. And nonetheless, later on the next paragraph we're going to see that Doeg claimed that Achimelech knew that David was running away. And that's how he set up Nov to be annihilated. So Doeg here was a big tzad, allegedly a very big tzad, Mechacham, the Abbasdin, a big tzadi coming to serve God in Nov. Yet at the same time, he's prepared and will later on double cross David and Achimelech in a very heinous way. So the question is, how do we understand, of course, Doeg? And we have to begin by understanding why it's called the Edomite. Now, Lichor, this is a very non-Jewish name. It's as if I came to you and said, you know, I started calling a Jew, Chveis, Reuven the Italian. What?
The Irishman, right.
Reuven the Irishman, right. So the thing is, you don't talk about Jews that way, right? You don't describe, maybe they're from Ireland, but you don't say that. He's an Irishman, right? So this is certainly not to use a name of some nation which is hated by the Jews. Edomites, you know, they were always causing strife for the Jews. So the reason why it's called Edomi, I think I mentioned this last week, is that as we've seen in the connection of David being called an Admoni. We know David is called Admoni, and Doeg is called an Edomi. And also, as I pointed out to you last week, that normally when Doeg is spelled out, which it's not here, it's not spelled out fully here, and we'll get back to it later on, but when Doeg is spelled out, Dalet Vav Aleph Gimel has the exact same gematria as David. So Doeg and David represent very similar concepts, yet in total competition with each other. David Admoni and Doeg Admoni. So how do we understand this? So let's take a look at my notes. The first page of it. So the fourth page in the handout. Fourth page, I know. Why was he called Edomi? The fourth line. So I bring down here the Reb Tzadok. V'sivas machshavto. So it starts a lot of a big chidushim behind Reb Tzadok. V'sivas machshavto shu Yitzhak v'varach Esav. Why did Yitzhak think to bless Esav, the original Edomite? Ki tzai b'fi. Because Esav was treacherous. What is that? And he had treachery in his mouth. What does this mean? Esav is the great prosecutor against Am Yisrael and their children. It's not just that Esav hates Yaakov. No, Esav represents the forces of evil in Shemayim, which attempt to do battle with Am Yisrael, and specifically prosecute against Am Yisrael. Though it's claimed that Am Yisrael is not worthy of being chosen to be the nation of God. Kayadua, as it's known, the Sorah Shel Esav, that the officer of Esav, in other words, the angelic officer of Esav, his Malach, Shu Kocho, who is the strength of Esav, who Rosh HaMakatrikim, is the head of all those who prosecute against the Jews. Why is that? Why is Esav designated for this task? Ki apen nivro ledaber b'divrei Torah. The mouth was created to talk words of Torah. Da'alzeh Esav, that's why it says, in Sanhedrin, the Apsadik test, all the toil of a man is for his mouth. What does that mean? The amal peh, to toil with his mouth, meaning to learn Torah. However, although man was created to use his mouth for Torah, both death and life are in the hands of the mouth. Anybody who does not merit, uses his mouth for lashon hara, then his mouth becomes for him the agent of death. Lashon hara kills three people: the person who tells it, the person who accepts it, and the person upon which it is told. Kishkula, why is it kill three people symbolically? Kishkula neged shlosh aves chamros, it is on a par with all three of the big three averos, kila arayis avarizor and shvichus domi k'mo shom ruzal v'doik aidei shagiva v'torah doik, since he was a mighty in Torah. He was a gibor of the Torah. Abir Haroim was the most powerful among the shepherds of Torah. Vayom Asmiel. He, however, to those who use Torah the right way, it's a drug of life. Lamasmilimba, to those who use Torah the wrong way, the left way, it's a drug of death. Nasalu Akoch. Therefore, the great power which he had because he learned Torah, Shahayu of a pair, which he had in his mouth, became Usama Moves, became an agent of death, a drug of death. Leos Medaber Lashonara utilized his mouth to speak Lashonara al David Amelech of Hashem, and David Shushorish Kedushas Hapesh Bekdusha, who is the source of utilization of a mouth for holiness. The Malchus Peh, he used his mouth for the kingship of God, which is Torah Shabbat Peh Karina Law, which is one of the names for Torah Shabbat Peh. The Mahamar Pasach Eliyahu. Vuad Moni Mifeinai. David was Admoni. He also had the characteristic of strife, of divisiveness, of prosecution. But he sublimated it. He channeled it. He used it only in Yifeinayim with beautiful eyes, which Chazal tells means that he consulted always the Sanhedrin, and of course made sure that his power to be warrior-like and to create strife was directed against Goyim, against people who are evil. Dorek Rakmida Sanhedrin. And Chazal say only called people with the consent of the Sanhedrin. Apiyator Sheruka, based on the Torah which they taught him. Avol Doeg, Nikra Domi, when he's called red, we see it's called the Edom Uesa. That's a redness of Edom, of Esau. Kigam Hukoch Obeviv, he also had Koyach in his mouth. Also Esau, meaning. The Akhain Yotsu Mera Rabbi Kivra Meir, Rosh Torah Shabbat Peh. Rabbi Akivra Meir, the heads of Torah Shabbat Peh, are descendants of Esau, the descendants of Edomite Gerim. But I point this out, Chazal Tal, the Arizal says, the Kedusha of Esau was in his mouth. He had Kedusha in his mouth. Otherwise, he would not have been able to fool Yitzchak. He abused that Kedusha precisely to fool Yitzchak. However, there was something there. And that's why later on, Esau did merit producing Tamid HaChomim of the caliber of Rabbi Akiva Meir, who descended from Gerim, from Esau. So there was something there. There was something in that mouth of Esau, which was potential Kedusha, and had he developed it, obviously would have led him to even greater Kedusha. But he didn't. He used it in order to distort, in order to cheat, in order to trick Yitzchak Avinu. Doeg was similar to that. Though he had tremendous power in his mouth. This is the man which was the greatest scholar of his generation, as we'll see later on. Doeg was a far bigger scholar than David and anybody else. Yet what did Doeg do? He used that power which he had and of his mouth and abused it. He used it for Torah, but at the same time used it to speak Lashon Hara. And the reason was because fundamentally he had the same midah of redness, of strife and divisiveness with Esau has. And David also had that midah. But David was able successfully to overcome it and redirect it towards places where it was warranted. But Doeg, he wasn't able to do so. And Rav Yisai, we know that this happens very frequently to people who learn Torah. We know that Kinas Soifim Tar B'Chochma, it says that if you have competition among scholars, it creates more knowledge. But that's not the whole meaning of the statement. Inherently, scholars compete with each other. That's the way it is. People like showing each other up. People like, proving each other wrong. People like playing stump the mug and cheer. You know, all sorts of different things they get to play and get to do. Some people here like to do that. But the bottom line is that one is supposed to make sure, like Chazal say, even though two Talmidei Chachamim were in the base medrash, it looks like they hate each other because they start throwing chairs at each other and arguing and learning, right? But they have esvoei besufa. They have to come to be have mutual affection at the end of the day. But it's not necessarily so. By Doeg, he became very great in Torah, but he became very, very much enwrapped in his own stature, in his own position, in his own prowess in Torah. So that is the Midah of Edom. That is an Edomite perspective. In other words, strife and divisiveness for self-aggrandizement and building up one's own reputation, one's own position, that's not Jewish. That's that which has to be, one has to distance oneself from. That comes from Esav. And that leads a person to prosecute and persecute others. And as great as a person might be in Torah, it doesn't do any good. It really doesn't. Torah by itself doesn't do any good. One can use Torah, Chazal say, all over, like you mentioned before, Lamasmilimba, to those who use it the wrong way, becomes Samamisa, becomes a drug of death. It really depends. That's, you know, why the Bali Musar came about and said, you know, it's not good enough just to learn Torah. I'm simplifying. But it's not good enough just to learn Torah, because if you just learn Torah, you don't necessarily become a big Yirei Shamayim. We all know the stories of people in Volozhin who suspend their time on Shabbos smoking and writing Chidushei Torah. Right? So it's a great intellectual pastime. But that's not what Torah is supposed to be all about. Now, we're going on here. Elishu lokach lechelko amava shebepeh. Esav took for himself the power of the death, which is in the mouth. Mitzad kochu shebefi, because of the power of his mouth, dibura osa roshem. Since he was so strong, he had such a great talent in his mouth, his words made an impression. Lios mikachi begave meromim. And his prosecutions of Am Yisrael also have an impression on high in Shamayim. Now, this is an amazing thing I'm talking about, right? Shocking. We find the words of Chazal. It says sometimes the midah of din, which God's judgment, demands prosecution, and it's important. It's good to have prosecution. Because there's sometimes is a kitru mitzad midah sadin, some prosecution from the attribute of justice to kedusha of holiness. And then from this come the penalties, the bitei adam, which are meted out by man, meted out by God, in the Torah, for those who transgress the will of God. So there is prosecution is necessary. There's evil in the world, prosecution is good. You need prosecution. If you have evil, you gotta prosecute, right? You have, sometimes the prosecution doesn't work, right? Sometimes, they can't convict O.J. Simpson. But the ideal is, prosecution is a good thing, right? It's important to prosecute people who are criminal, people who transgress. So, it's not just true in Olam Hazeh, in terms of our interpersonal relationships, but rather also in Shamayim. If a person commits an Avera, and you don't punish him in Olam Hazeh, so ultimately it's going to be for his, to his detriment. Because what's going to come out as a result of that is that he's going to lose his Olam Haba, he's going to get punished much more severely, he's going to commit more Averas. So punishment and prosecution is a good thing. Not always. You don't want it, necessarily, but in and of itself it's a good thing. So here he says, V'choshev Yitzchak, so Yitzchak thought, look at this, halfway of a fella. Ki rotza Hashem Yisborach, what did Yitzchak think about Esav? He didn't see Esav was a mean dude who said nasty things. They saw that. But he thought, ki rotza Hashem Yisborach, God wanted, sheyia nefesh, that there should be a nefesh b'poyav, a person, an individual, a live human being, l'kitruv zeh, to prosecute Am Yisrael in this world. He thought that Am Yisrael needs a watchdog, not just a spiritual watchdog, but a human watchdog. Uvemes, now, so that, you understand? When Yitzchak heard Esav asking him all the questions, how to be meister, you know, remember that he asked him how to be meister salt and how to take tithes off straw. So Yitzchak thought, oh, this person, he's very, very meticulous, and very exacting. And that's good for the creation of the Jewish people. Because I need somebody who's going to be involved in Jewish people, who's going to be meticulous, exacting, and a watchdog to make sure everybody does the right thing. That is the Tzayid B'fiv, he thought Esav. It's true. Esav was gruff, perhaps, or mean. But he thought that that's also necessary. And so we need prosecution. We need to have people who are going to make sure that everybody toes the line. And the MS says Reb Tzadok is a mistake. Chas v'shalom in a Kodesh Baruch Hu chafetz b'mishim medaber d'ilturi albanav. You know what? Hashem doesn't want it. Yitzchak had a good svara, but he was wrong. It's not that a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants a prosecution. No. A Kodesh Baruch Hu would much rather everybody lived in peace and harmony and forgot about the prosecution. Hi, somebody's doing something wrong, somebody's doing something bad, let it be. Don't even discuss it. Don't raise the point. But a Kodesh Baruch Hu's Rachmanis is so powerful that he'd rather gloss over things than let them be raised in public. So here, he made a mistake, Yitzchak. And Kodesh Baruch Hu does not want people to prosecute. So it's just that Esav and Doeg, with their improper choice, free will, took this position to themselves. By Esav, this is a treachery in his mouth. Yitzchak saw that Esav had the power to create prosecution on high. The Rosh, Yeshlo Koach Bifiv, and he saw he has his power in his mouth. The Kosh Choshav, and he thought, the Koach Zemitzad Hashem Yisbrach. His power is from Hashem. The She'enu Makachri Yelamash Hashem Yisbrach Rotsu Yishay Kachri. And that Esav is only going to prosecute that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to prosecute. Why is Esav called a Doeg? So because Doeg has this midah of strife, of divisiveness, of prosecution. Now, again, he could have used it the right way. He could have used it, you know, like David HaMelech says, "Misanecho Hashem Esno, Vesoivecho Eskotet." I'll fight against your enemies. Doeg didn't do that. In that respect, there's this amazing thing which Reb Tzadok brings down later on, beginning of Shmuel Beis. It says that who came to tell David that Shaul had been killed or had killed himself, a Ben Ger Amaleki, the son of a Ger from Amalek. And there's a Medrash Tanchum who says that that Ger Amaleki was Doeg. Okay? Lachain, also Ger Amaleki, take a look on the next page, the notes. Lachain also Ger Amaleki Ubeno. That Ger Amaleki was his son. Moshkazav Rashi Reshmo Beis B'Shem Ravzal. The Nikra Amaleki, so Doeg is called an Amalekite. Ad Kadei Kach. Is he literally an Amalekite? Says Reb Tzadok, not necessarily so. We know that as a general principle, we generally don't accept gerim from Amalek. So rather, what it means is, v'nikra Amaleki, he's called Amaleki, shureishis goyim, he is the first among the goyim, v'shoresh ha'ne'elam dera, and the hidden roots of evil, that's Amalek, and therefore, Doeg, who had that same midah of being involved, immersed in evil, having a root which was evil, that's why he was a master of Lashon Hara, which is the talking soul of evil. And that's why, way back when, now I remember the second time Doeg spoke Lashon Hara on David, when David was taken to be the to be the page in the house of Shaul, so David, so Hashem, so Shaul, Doeg says to Shaul, Hashem ima, which means he can pass Kedah Halacha properly and you can't, which is a Lashon Hara. So that also is Lashon Hara. Hashem ima, kumash kosa per chelik. The rak b'zen iskani ki madreg also. Because this was precisely the point which Doeg was jealous of. Doeg learned a tremendous amount of Torah, but Hashem wasn't with Doeg. Because in his root, in his shoresh ha'ne'elam, in his hidden root, Doeg was evil. Just like Amalek is the source of evil, the source of Doeg was mired in evil. The Gemara there says in Sanhedrin, we'll come back to in a few minutes, Torahso, Haisa miyasina miyusafa v'lachutz. His Torah was extrinsic to his essence. The Gemara says, Tina Haisa b'libo. There was hatred in his heart. His heart, his essence was evil. Where it says there, HaKadosh Baruch Hu libabai, Hashem wants the heart. And the heart of Doeg was evil. As much as you are a Strymol or a Hamburg, you know, whatever, a Frak, a Bekesher, I know we don't know if Doeg was a Litvak or a Chassid. It's not recorded. But sure, the Hasidim claim it was a Litvak, and the Litvak claim it was a Hasidim. But in any event, whatever holiness he had on the outside, it was all extrinsic. It wasn't intrinsic. Now, I believe that I wrote this here. Reb Tzadok will later explain how this tribe's device is blamed to annihilate Novi or Kohanim. But the Radak says that he was called the Domi because he lives in that region. I don't think that's a contradiction to Reb Tzadok. Perhaps it was his environment which led him, in fact, to absorb and abuse the Midah of Kina. In other words, you live among Edomim, you come from that region, what Midah do you have? You have the Midah being an Edomite. Now, I want to digress here for a moment. I recently wrote an article in the Jewish Observer, an outstanding article, on the topic of Isaac Breuer. Not really relevant. It's not relevant to the topic right now. I wrote a line in the article. I wrote that the Nazis and their war against the Jews, this is a quote from Isaac Breuer, represent the war, no less than the war of the Sitra Achra against Kodesh Baruch Hu. So one very chashev yid from the Shulaim called up the editor of the Jewish Observer. He called him collect and was irate. He said, "This smacks of Christianity." Why is it smack of Christianity? Because l'chayra, it seems that in Judaism we don't have a Satan or the other side fighting against God. If it's a Christianity, God is fighting against the Satan, because Satan is a fallen angel, and we have to stay out of Satan's clutches because he's really an adversary of God. Whereas in Judaism, it would seem that Satan has a divine purpose. He's not an adversary, but he's an agent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there was his taina against what I wrote in the article. So I responded like this. One can get many responses to that taina, but the response I gave was that it's true that the purpose of evil in the world was initially good. And it still is good. There has to be a possibility to have avera in order to have reward and punishment. In order to have the possibility of getting reward for mitzvahs. There has to be the possibility of evil in order for mankind to be charged to go out and do good. That's all true. However, we find throughout history that the possibility of evil was abused by human beings and even by malachim out of free will in order to fight against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The first example of this, which Ari Kaplan brings down, is the Nachash. The Nachash abused the limited power he had to entice, abused it, and led Adam and Chava completely astray, and as a result was cursed himself. The people in Migdal Bavel, they used their God-given freedom to start rebellion against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Amalek, ki yada case called milchamal Hashem ba'Amalek midor dor. There's a war between Amalek and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Torah tells us this literally, that there's a war between Amalek and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when we come and we see that there is a war between the Sitra Achra and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the pshat is that although originally evil was designed to be good, the fact that there is evil is abused by man in his mounting and ultimately futile but temporarily effective war against God. Since God doesn't unleash his full force in order to fight evil, because he wants man to fight evil, so therefore the forces of evil actually fight against God and occasionally achieve temporary victory. That's why we have a concept even of kishofim, of sorcery, which it says our machishin pamal shamala can defy heavenly decrees and writs. There is such a concept. So when we talk about Doeg being an Amaleki and an Edomi, Doeg actually is a remarkable thing. He was a tremendous Talmid Chacham, yet he was actually trying to use his Torah and his great wisdom and his great position in order to fight against HaKadosh Baruch Hu's master plan. In order to fight against David. He used everything which he had in order to wage a war. When he had a capacity of darshening a drasha and learning that Moavim are allowed in Moavios, are allowed in the congregation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he refused to do so. He refused to accept that drasha. Why? Because then it would allow David in, and that was not something he was prepared to do. So Doeg's redness led him to fight against the Mashiach Hashem, against the designated by God, against David HaMelech. Now, as I mentioned before, And Doeg spelled out the same gematria as David. But you pointed out last week that in this pasuk, Doeg is not spelled out. It's spelled Dalet Aleph Gimel. Instead of the full 14 of Dalet Vav Dalet, Dalet Vav Aleph Gimel, here it's only Dalet Aleph Gimel. So I think that why is the Vav missing here in this pasuk? So I think that it symbolizes what Doeg was missing. Vav always is, what's the meaning of a Vav, generally? No. When we have a Vav in Hebrew language. A connection. Vav always represents Vav HaChibur, right? Connection. Vav is Ve, right? Which means and always, to connect two things. In fact, in the Kabbalah, the Vav is regarded as a pipeline. It's a straight line, a pipeline which leads from Shamayim to Eretz. In the name Yudke Vavke, in the name of God, the first part of the name, which is the more lofty part of the name, the Yudke, is connected to the last day, which is considered the more mundane part of the name, by the Vav. So Vav Achibur, connecting the one to the other. Okay? So the Vav is missing in the letter, though, in the word Doeg. And I think that the Vav is missing because that's what Doeg was missing. He was missing the connection between himself and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But more than that, he was missing the connection between himself and his own wisdom. In other words, he learned a tremendous amount of Torah. His intellect was very, 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 very good. But he didn't bring it down and apply it to his bodily, to his regular existence. In the Beis Medrash, he's a tremendous Talmid Chacham, a great scholar. But it didn't impact upon his self, on his midos, on his characteristic traits, remained the same jealous, divisive individual which he was before he learned all the Torah. And Rabbi Yisrael, with this, could understand something beautiful. I'm going to take some credit here for myself. I said this on my own, but then afterwards, I found in the Maharal. So it's always mixed feelings when you find something, you said, you want to be your Chiddush. But the other hand, it makes you feel good that he found something like this in the Maharal. But so when I said that, when I was praying this morning, came to my mind. It says there in Gemara Sanhedrin Daf Kuf Vav, it speaks about Doeg. It says Doeg and Achitophel, who's a guy we'll meet later on, who was another adversary of David, they were able to darshan 300 or 400 halachas in Migdal HaPerech Bavir, which literally means the power flying through the sky. And there's a whole shot of what that Migdal HaPerech Bavir is, because there are halachic issues. There are halachic sugyas. There are halachic discussions in Shas about a Migdal HaPerech Bavir. If you have a wooden closet flying through the air, does it become tameh if it goes to a cemetery, or does it not become tameh? There is such halacha. And it could be taken kipshuto. The Chazal is saying they were so, so proficient in learning that even this very obscure and obtuse halacha, they were able to darshan tremendous drushes in. But Rashi says, another pshat there, Rashi says that Migdal HaPerech Bavir is the letter Lamed. Because it's got a little thing, you know, connecting up into the air. So that's the Migdal, the tower, hooking up into the air. And what I said, and I'll show it to you the Maharal in a minute, is that another interpretation, which the Maharal does tie into Rashi though, which is that, what does it mean the Migdal is Perech Bavir? It means that Doeg's intellect was Perech Bavir. He had an intellect which floated into the highest realms of Talmudic understanding, but it only floated in the air. It never connected down to the ground. That Migdal, that great tower, would stretch to an awesome height up in the profoundest reaches of learning and of study and of scholarship, was only up there in the highest heavens. It never had a bearing on his existence and never changed him as an individual. The Migdal was always Perech Ba'avir. And take a look here on here in my notes. I bring down here at the bottom of the page where the asterisk is, the Maharal brings down Chiddush HaGadol there. Migdal Perech Ba'avir, Nira Shiratzon Lomar. In says Maharal, I think what he means is Ha'Secha Shel Adam. So about man's intellect, Ha'Ola Lamalo, which goes high up. Man's intellect is called the tower which goes up into the sky. What we would say today is that it's a rocket ship, right? A tower which shoots up into the sky. They obviously had UFOs back then. even though everything is born by a human being, in other words, the brain is inside the human's body, nonetheless, although it's physically born by the human body, we cannot say that the brain is spiritually born by the human body, until his intellect stands within him and is conjoined with him. If your intellect is not with you combined, standing in the sky. I'm not sure what he means by this. He says there are many opinions about this, but I know what he means by many opinions. Anyway, and another way of explaining this issue, what does it mean, a tower which flies in the airspace of the world? These are intellectual matters, not man's mind, but rather the intellectual matters, which are not mixed up with the physical existence. That's why they're called the Migla Perech Ba'avir. The Yireh, and it seems, Ki Rashi, Shepiresh, Bipi Hashmua, Rashi has a tradition, Migla Perech, that the flying tower, Shuagagash Olamid, is the roof of the Lamed, who Perish Arishon. First, to the first interpretation which Mara brought down, that's referring to the intellect. Ki alamed hu asechel ba'adam. Ki alamed hu asechel ba'adam tzorosakam alamed. The lamed refers to the intellect, the mind, because the mind looks like a lamed. Now, it doesn't literally look like a lamed, but rather, ki asechel uni, one's an analytic mind, vitam in a guf is distinct from the body, for olamal goes higher up than the body. Uvamashu kapu lamato anose, shuka kashmi, and with that which bends down towards the bearer of the mind, that's where it connects to the physical. In any event, bezeh, in the roof of the lamed, doi kadashin yesh shlosh mos halachas. But he couldn't connect that down to this world. He remained a great scholar without any bearing on his traits. Now, and this is a very interesting thing over there that Mora brings down. Mora tries to explain why it was called Doeg. Later on, the next pairing is going to be called Doeg, also with a yud. The Mora says, "Mitchila, Hakadosh Baruch Hu Yoshev Doeg Olam." First, Hashem was sitting and worried about him. Shema Yates in time of Torah, maybe he'll go sour, or whatever it says there. Then it says, "Lebasof," at the end, Hakadosh Baruch Hu said, "Vay on him Doeg." He said, "It's a lesson of woe." Because Lamaisa, he did go off the beaten path. So Yad Ramah, one of the showing there, is an interesting discussion, which is a philosophical discussion, although it's not really directly related to Pshat and Pesukim. He says that, hey, wait a second. Doesn't mean Hakadosh Baruch Hu is doeg. Hakadosh Baruch Hu is worried. Doesn't Hashem know? Doesn't mean Hashem worried. It's a theological issue. What does it mean Hashem worried? Yeah, but Hashem knows. What does it mean Hashem is worried about it happening? Hashem knows it's going to happen. Right? So there's no point in being worried. You can mourn it, but there's no point in being worried. More than that, my Yad Ramah goes even further and asks the more basic theological question, which is, look, if Hashem knows. So instead of being worried, just don't create knowing. Don't make him. Don't make tzaras. Right? Hashem knows. If you say manasha, either it sounds like Hashem doesn't know, and if Hashem does know, then why bother making knowing altogether? Question, right? So, Hitaka goes into the long discussion there at the Yad Ramah about how Kodesh Baruch Hu knows things. And now they're not predestined as a result. Hashem knows, but Hashem doesn't predetermine them. It's like it's a different type of knowledge. If we know something's going to happen, generally it's because we know we are going to determine the course of events. So that's how we know it's going to happen. But Kodesh Baruch Hu knows because he Yad Ramah doesn't say this, but this is the way we explain all the time. Hashem transcends time. And therefore Hashem knows future events in the here and now, so to speak. So that's why by Doeg he knew that was going to happen. However, it's not a kasha why he made him that way. First of all, Doeg serves a purpose. Of course Doeg serves a purpose. Doeg is the adversary of David, and it's necessary for David to have adversaries. If only to create Nisyonos. But he does say a very interesting thing, which is that when the Gemara says things like this, this is a very important fundamental concept. When the Gemara says that Kosh Baruch Hu is sitting with Doeg Shemo Yetzel Tarbus Ra, the Gemara is talking from our perspective. Hashem knows it's going to happen, and Hashem is aware of everything that's going to occur, and there's no point, there's no worry. But the way Hashem runs the world, it's as if he is subject to human restrictions of knowledge and understanding and things like that. And therefore, the Gemara wants to describe the situation. The Gemara describes the situation in a way which is human, a human perspective. So therefore, since from a human perspective, it was would he or won't he? And then, whoops, he did. It's unfortunate. So we talk about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's relationship with Dovid, it's also described in the same vein that it says, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu acts as if he doesn't know and deals with the human being in that respect. Okay? Now, turning further, let's turn the page. As I said, the last page of the handout. Ultimately, the Chazal say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu liba boy, Hashem wants the heart, and they, Dovid and Achitophel, didn't have it, and therefore, fascinating thing. Lord says, they couldn't pass an halach the right way. Now, again, I want to digress and point out to you a very important thing. I'm not sure how to say this properly. No, it's okay. I'll take my red chances. Some of the greatest poskim, let's say Rav Moshe Feinstein. When you look at an Igros Moshe, you can argue on most of the things he says. A lot of the things in the lumbus, in the analysis and in the approach, are questionable. In terms of, you know, rigorous critique, you can possibly come up with a way of arguing for Rav Moshe in many, many cases. Yeah, we know that Rav Moshe Feinstein, just as an example, merited of having Am Yisrael in America, at least, follow his psukim overall most of the time. Now, how do we explain that? If a lot of, you know, there's a guy, some guy in Queens, some idiot in Queens, who wrote a sefer called Mana Leigros, a vicious and vituperative, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, attack on Igros Moshe. Attacking Reb Moshe time after time after time. And a lot of the times he makes foul points. It's just that he does it in a vicious way, which is totally improper and a total lack of derech eretz. That's why it's very hard to find the book. But I have seen it, that the Yeshiva Library has one under lock and key in the back room. And of course, me being the curious sort, I've seen it, looked at it a couple of times. And Rav Avadia Yosef quotes him, in fact, the Mana Leigros, a couple of times, and seen it in Shulchan. And he says, I agree with the Mana Leigros of what he says about Rav Moshe Feinstein, but it says about Rav Moshe Feinstein's lumbus, but the way he said it is not proper and there's a lack of derech. Okay. Be that as it may, though, again, even though one can argue many things that Rav Moshe says, a lot of times he passes them like Rav Moshe. So we see a very, very interesting thing, which is expressed by this Gemara. Dovid and Achitophel were the greatest Talmid Chacham of their generation. They were mamish, the leaders. But we don't paskin on people based on their leadership in scholarship or in knowledge or in acumen or in any of those areas. It could be that the greatest Talmid Chacham of the previous generation were the people in JTS. Maybe they were, but we're not going to paskin halacha like them. Even the Conservative Jewish Theological Seminary. We're not going to paskin like them, because to be a posek and to have suck like you, it's not like a legal system. You can't be a corrupt individual and yet be an expert in law. No. In order to be a posek, you have to have great Yerushalayim. And that halacha should be like you. That Hashem should agree that Am Yisrael should follow you, and that the hashgacha, the divine manipulation of the Bria, should be such that Psach should follow your opinion. Doesn't always have to do with how big a lamdan you have, you are, or how big a scholar you are, or how well you know the halacha, or how well you can write a tshuva. A lot of times it has to do with Soda Hashem Lirael. So the secret of God, in other words, the Psak Halacha, goes to those who fear Hashem. Oh, that's the case. Dovid and Achitophel, they knew a lot, but that wasn't sufficient. They could pass in Shilas, but we don't pass them like them. Soda Hashem, in order to get the secret of God, in other words, the proper Psak Halacha, it's only the Rav, it only goes to people who fear God properly. So we didn't paskin like Dovid and Achitophel. They don't paskin like people as scholarly as they are if they don't have the right credentials in Yerushalayim. There's no such thing in Judaism as divorcing law from religion. No such thing. Now, in the end, it says in the Gemara, says, when Dovid was about to meet his doom, three bad malachim came to Dovid. First, one caused him to forget all his learning. Ve'echot she'saraf nishmas, and then one burnt his soul. Ve'echot she'pizer afora b'batei knesios b'batei midrashos. And another one scattered his ashes in the shuls and in the batei medrash. We'll come back to this again in the next parak, but obviously it's not to be taken literally. The ashes of Doeg weren't scattered by Malachim in batei midrashos literally. What it means, however, is that the entire learning of Doeg and Achitofel was worth nothing because it wasn't accompanied by Yerushalayim. Therefore, it made no impact on their neshama. Why is the Talmud Chacham held in such high esteem? Why does Torah save an individual from all sorts of Gehenna? Because it made impact on his neshama. It made him a more refined, a more sublime individual. By Doeg, all his knowledge was the same thing as if he had to know Chvesa, he would be an expert in 18th century English literature. Has no impact on your soul. Doesn't make you a better person. So that's what the Doeg's Torah didn't make him a better person. So Shikach Tamud, of course he's going to forget it. It didn't impact on his neshama. It didn't become part of himself. It didn't become him. So for the automatic, of course he's going to forget it. And Mimela, his neshama is worthless. If all of those turn, all those mitzvahs didn't change you as an individual, if you had that stubborn resistance in your heart the whole time, like we said, that Doeg in his heart was evil, like Amalek is evil, then what impact does it have that you learn the Torah? Your neshama has not changed at all. So as nishmaso, his neshama was changed. But nonetheless, Doeg is Jewish. And Reb Tzadok brings down there, although it's not really in this, I didn't, not here, he brings down somewhere else. Doeg is listed among those Eilim Chayil Kolam Haba. But there's the Gemara there says here in Sanhedrin, Perichel, that Dorshe Roshumos, Hayu'omim, Kulam Vayme Olam Haba. They all come to Olam Haba. Even Doeg, Achitof, all these people who are enumerated, those who don't have portion Olam Haba, they all get Olam Haba. So Reb Tzadok says, a lot of people say, it's not just Reb Tzadok. But what does Dorshe Roshumos mean? Literally means the people who dash them Psukim. But Reb Tzadok says, Dorshe Roshumos means the people who look for impressions. And there's no such thing as a person who left a completely negative impression on the world. There must have been something positive which a person left. For instance, Doeg. Let's say he himself, the Torah didn't impact on him. But he argued with other people in the Beis Medrash, and other people grew in learning because of Doeg, right? Even David. David was built up from his constant confrontations with Doeg, so a positive impression was left. Something happened, which Doeg did. Therefore, it's not possible that Doeg's neshama will be completely lost. What kind of Olam Haba it'll get, I don't know. But something it has to get. And that's the symbolism here of Afaro is Babate Knesilsu Bate Midrashos. It's true, Doeg as a person failed dismally, but he had an impact. He was the Av Beis Din. He was a Talmud Chacham. He did have an impact on the Batei Midrashos and Batei Knesios. That's his Olam Haba. Not a direct one, which his own Neshama gets, but rather an indirect one through his Afar, through the fragments of his self, which he did leave and did have an impact in the various places where he was. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Korach is different because Korach didn't lose his Chayek Olam Haba. Korach made one major mistake, a big boo-boo. But he didn't lose his Chayek Olam Haba as a result. It's important to distinguish.
But Korach wanted the possibility that Doeg wanted David.
I don't know. It's possible to say it, but I'm not sure because Doeg at the time, David at the time did not have kingship. So it's hard to say. It seems like it was just jealousy lishma. You know, I shouldn't say lishma. Jealousy of David as a person, not David as a king. Because this is prior to the kingship. It's possible Doeg somehow became aware of it somehow. But we don't know that for a fact. So I can't say for sure.
Aren't the Neshamas of Korach and his followers always
so skinny? Yeah, but that's not a loss of Chelek Olam Haba. No, that means that they needed a long kapora process. But it's not that they lost their Olam Haba as a result. They're two separate pile of things. Okay? Now, okay, that's what Pasuk Ches. Let's go to Pasuk Ches now. So, Vayomer David l'Achimelech. We're finished with Doeg for tonight. We'll come back in the next break. It's much more prominent. Vayomer David l'Achimelech. So, David says to Achimelech, V'in yesh po Tachas Yadcha, is there perhaps here under your hands chanis, a spear, a choreb, or a sword? Ki gam chabi gam kelai, lo lakachti, biodi, both my sword and my instruments. I didn't take my hands, ki yadcha bar melchakutz, because they had to go do an urgent mission for the king. So David says, I'm weaponless and I need a weapon. Do you have any weapons here which I could have? So prosecuted by Yoimer. Achimelech the Kohen said, Cherub Goliath Aplishti, the sword of Goliath the Philistine, Asherikisa that you smote, Vemekoi La in the valley of the walnut, Vinehi Lutza Basimla, it is wrapped in a garment, Achre Ephod, behind the apron, one of the big dekuna, Imosa Tikach Lachakach, if you want to take it, take it. Kenacher Zulasa Bazek, because there are no other weapons in this city. David said, "Ain't kamoah, there's no sword like that. Shnen Ali, give it to me." So, an interesting thing here. A couple of interesting. What does it mean, Achreya Ephod? So, Yonason, the Targum Yonason said that Achimelech only gave David the sword after consulting the Urim Atumim for David, which is saying Doeg will pick up on the next parak. That Achimelech committed an act of rebellion in consulting the Urim Vetumim on David's behalf. Because it's known that only a king is allowed to consult the Urim Vetumim. So his having taken the Urim Vetumim. Nov is going to be put to death. Now the Rabbah and Radak learned that the hesitancy. Achimelech uses a lot of words in this passage. So they learned that the reason why Achimelech didn't want to give him the sword right away is because the sword was there to commemorate him. So therefore, he didn't want to give it away. Is, you know, commemoration of a nace is a big thing. Don't want to give it away that easily. The mom, what? Museum piece, right? The mom says, name of the Barbanel, that he didn't think David would want it because they are accustomed not to take swords of fallen warriors and use them in battle. Bad omen. So David says, don't worry, I'm not afraid of bad omens because, on the contrary, I could achieve the great miracle with that sword, therefore I'm willing to take it. But there's another kashya, which is, remember when David went into battle with Goliath, he couldn't even support Shaul's armor, right? Put on Shaul's armor, and he couldn't move. It's a pipsqueak. So here David has, certainly Goliath's sword would have been very, very heavy for David. So where did David get the strength all of a sudden to wield Goliath's sword and say, oh, I'm going to take that as my weapon with me? Which would be very unwieldy and very difficult for David to bear. So where did David get the strength? It's clear David became very strong from somewhere. Where did he get that strength? So it's a shocking, shocking Ripsodic here. Of course, all shocking Ripsodics come from the Yishbitzer. Here he brings down here on the last page. Al-derech she-shamati. This is like that which I heard. It says, Rashi brings down a chumash, that the Leitzane Ador, the scoffers of the generation, would say that how did Sarah get pregnant with Yitzchak? Well, she was by Avimelech, right? By the king of the Plishtim. So Rav Tzadok says, what do you think? It's a sheker? So it's an outright distortion? No. It's true. Where did Avram get the strength to give birth to a son? He was barren all those years. It says, what happened when Avimelech took Sarah? It says that Avimelech and his household became, they became stopped up, backed up. They couldn't attend to their needs. They couldn't procreate. They couldn't do anything. At that time, Shenita Lakoch mi Avimelech, when the power was taken by Avimelech, Nitan lo. That power to procreate, which at that time was taken from Avimelech, was transferred to Avram. V'lifami kach yamida. Sometimes this is the way things work. V'amishpat, and this is the law. She'iyav shalash piyalazeh, you can't give this one. Rakshi, Chumach, unless you take from the other one. We saw this way back at the beginning of Shmuel. Absurdist said a similar thing by Penina and Chana. That the only way Chana got the kids is by Penina losing her kids. It was it's like the law of the conservation of matter. In other words, there's a finite amount of that koyach in the world. And it transfers from one to the other. There's no yesh me'ayin, new creation from ex nihilo, from nothingness of this koyach in the world. Avram Avinu lokach ruach chachma ubina miparo, and Avram took when Sarah was taken to Paro the first time. So Paro also underwent the same affliction. Then Avram took a power of wisdom and understanding miparo, and now he took a ruach of etzah gvura of counsel and strength miavimelech. Rach sheetzel, just that by Avram Avinu this power was keburuach, was with the spirit of God, and that's the Yiras Hashem, knowledge and fear of God. Volid Yitzchak, and gave birth to Yitzchak. V'chein David HaMelech Lo Hashem, and so to David. Me'ayin lokach gura, from where he gets strength, this little pipsqueak, where he get the strength? Rak me'iz gabruso agoyas. When he overcame Goliath, so the power of Gevurah transferred. This is the law of the transfer, law of transferal of spiritual forces. That the Izgabrus HaGoyas was Mimele Hoya Etzlo HaGvura B'Yiras Hashem. He got that Gvura, but in a holy way. Not in the profane way by which it was by Goyas, but rather in a holy way which it manifested itself by David. So this is a shocking concept. At least to me it's shocking. But what the axiom Reb Tzadok is presenting here is that there's times when you can't get a Koyach from nothingness. I don't know if it's always, it sounds like Reb Tzadok, sometimes it's possible. But sometimes it's not possible, and you have to get it from somewhere. And the koyach, in the abstract, is the koyach, say, of gvura, of strength. And by Goliath, it manifests itself one way, and by David, it manifests itself another way. So I want to mention another a corollary of this principle, which Reb Tzadok says another, in or say for Orzer Ruach Tzadik. One of the first things I ever learned from Reb Tzadok, the Sefer Orzer Ruach Tzadik. So he writes there, it's mostly about Yetzias Mitzrayim. So he writes there at length about another principle, similar principle, which is not similar but not the same. Which is that any hashpah, any divine influence, which comes down equally to Goyim and to Jews. It's just that by the Jews it's used, hopefully, in a holy way. And by Goyim, it's used by a profane way. For instance, when I learned it, the first thing which came to mind, which is very simple, very clear-cut example, is that the scientific method, which became prevalent, was in the end of the 19th century in secular circles, also became a prevalent approach towards learning in Jewish circles. That's when the Litvaks, developed the Brisker Derech and the other Eastern European yeshivas, which are really much more scientific and analytic than previous drachim. And if you go back in history, you can trace always throughout history that the influence from Shamayim has come down a certain way, and it comes down in a similar fashion, but different manifestations for Goyim and for Jews. And the same thing here is a similar idea, though not exactly the same, that the same influence which was present by a Goy can be taken by a Jew and utilized for the Jews' purposes. What did you want to say before? The meat of Kina? I don't know if that... by Chana Pnina, that's what Tzadok said. He said Chana wanted to avoid that. She prayed that Pnina should not lose her kids. In Lamaisa, that's what happened. There, it wasn't... she prayed on her own. It shouldn't happen that way. That's why she came up with the name Tzvokos, which means that was how Reb Tzadok explained Tzvokos. The Chana Klein said, listen, you have so many different types of people in the world, you don't have to take from Pnina to give to me. Make two separate hashbos. But it was not to be that way, because since Pnina represented such a negative and Chana such a positive, so it flowed from one to the other. But you're right. If it was a conscious effort by a tzaddik to sap the spiritual force of a Russia, maybe that would look to us as jealous. But maybe not. Because on the other, if he's abusing it, so why shouldn't I use it properly? That could be another perspective, right? Why should Goliath be strong and abuse it if Dovey can get it and be? No, that's what I'm trying to say here. It's not always true. That's his chiddush. I know. If it wasn't a chiddush, there'd be no point of you sitting here, right? If you just learned here things you knew from yesterday, then why would you come? So obviously, no, I know. The chiddush, what? What is contradict? Oh, yeah. You mean that everybody gets their own parnasa, nobody touches anything else? Yeah. It's not partial. Right. Recording of tzaddik, that's not a simple thing. Yeah. It's not necessarily true. It could be that sometimes the fact that when you get new resources, it comes at somebody else's expense. That's right. Well, it depends if you do it intentionally. Avraham didn't go to Hashem and say, listen, take it from Avimelech and give it to me. Avraham asked for it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided, you know what, he needs it, I'll take it from Avimelech and give it to him. It wasn't Avraham who did it. You can't tie it on Avraham Avinu. You can't tie it besides him. Oh, that's right. So there's going to be something which we're going to come back to next time, which is that I'm going to come back to, I know it's late already, it's hard for me to get to that, but Lamaisa, well, Gemara Sanhedrin there says that David was punished. It had to be punished because Doeg lost his old Mabar as a result of David. In other words, David is responsible for Doeg's losing his old Mabar. What did David do? David was the subject of persecution. But as it happens that way. I see this as being similar to your question. Similar, this should bother you in the same vein. So it's just like it's not fair that my success has come at the expense of that individual. So too, why should David have to suffer because the other individual sinned against him? Do you understand why I'm tying in those two things? So I have to come back to it because it's late. But yeah, there is such a thing. There is an interconnectedness. And it's not everybody separate.
Didn't these persons also come into play with the needs of the Yaakov? Especially when Yaakov acquired the Bechor.
Yeah, with Esav and Yaakov. Specifically with Dina.
By Dina.
Yaakov was punished for not letting Esav have Dina. Why should Esav get Dina, right? This Russia should get Yaakov Avinu's daughter. Right. So all these things. I guess we'll have to leave it for next week. Right. But according to the fundamental principle which we'll have to explore is how everything is a balance. It's true. You would like to think that each individual works in a vacuum and his own accomplishments are measured against his own shortcomings, and that each individual's resources are his own and his accomplishments and shortcomings are his own as well. But it's not true. Everything is interrelated. And there's a shocking Gemara there about, I think it's brought down there in Sanhedrin, I don't recall. Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't allow into his presence in the world to come somebody shechavero nena shal yodo, who caused his friend to be punished. In other words, if I punch you in the nose and as a result I get punished in Gehenna, then you will not be allowed into the mechitza of HaKadosh Baruch Hu for that reason. What? Okay, on that happy note, I think we'll end for this evening. Come back to it next week. So he couldn't see exactly what was going on, and he thought when David took off the uniform, right, David Shaul presented David with his armor. And David said it doesn't fit. He took it off. So Shaul thought, oh, it must be David's giving up, he's going to go back home. Sometime later, he sees this figure in the distance going out to fight Goliath. He doesn't realize who it is. Had he seen him up close and had he realized that David was the one to have gone, then he would have known it was David. But he didn't realize it because David was in a distance, and therefore he asked Avner, standing next to him, who is this kid who's going out to wage the battle? Okay? Anyway, let's go further. Talk to him in the vlog. Excuse me? This is one of the reasons why. You mean was the question finally answered here? Yeah, I can't hear the whole question. Again? Alright, yeah. Oh, that Shmuel wrote around this time because of this, probably. Yes, probably now, because Shmuel actually is going to die very shortly. So I assume that this is although it doesn't say so here explicitly in Rashi, you're right. Probably this is the catalyst for Shmuel to have written Ruth. Okay. Person involved. Vayomer HaMelech, the king said, "Shalta ben Mizael, ask who this young man is." So more dig.
Hebrew, five languages, the Pasuk Nunei. Nunei said, nah. When he says Elam, he already gives him new respect because he sees that he killed Nunei, like he pointed out. He was just going, David was going. And then in Unvav, he already says that David killed Goliath. He said, let's call him an Elam, not a Nar.
What is an Elam?
Elam is a young man, but more honorific than Nar. Nar means child. An Elam means young man. Ukasuv David Makos, that was with David term from smiting the Philistine. Vaikachosel Avner, Avner brought him. The Rosh HaPlishti to be Yado, and the hand of the Plishti was in his hand. The hand of the Plishti was in his hand. You know, I don't know what to make of this. But the entire evening this night, tonight, we have not seen the word Goliath. Plishti, Plishti, Plishti. No Goliath. It's almost as if we're saying David here in his maiden battle was doing a battle with Goliath as a representative of the Plishtim. He wasn't doing battle with, in a metaphysical sense, he wasn't doing battle with Goliath on a individual level, but rather David, as a prelude to his life as king of Israel, is doing battle with the Philistine nation. And that's why Goliath is called the Plishtim, not Goliath. I'm just giving that as a hypothesis, but it is important to note that he's not called Goliath. Okay? Said Ben Miatanar, whose son are you, young man? Vayom David is talking to David. He doesn't build him up. He doesn't call him an Elam. He calls him so or not. Vayom David. David said, Ben Avdecha Yishai Beis Alachmi. I'm the son of Yishai from Beis Lechem. So the Malbim puts this psukim, these psukim. They can be learned simple, but the mom puts them into the context of the marriage proposal. In other words, Shaul is asking him through Avner, with Avner, what's yichus? Are you suitable for my daughter? Come from a Rebbe Shemishpacha? You know, are you capable of marrying to the kingship? So David says, listen, the way the Malvin learns it, he says, I'm not nobility, I'm not anything, I'm the son of your servant Yishai. And the way the Malvin learns it, what he's saying is, I didn't do this for the marriage. I did it with Shem Shemayim. I did it to be Makadi Shem Shemayim by killing Goliath. What comes next, I don't care. Stop asking me questions about my yichus, I'm not concerned. Okay, and that's why he answered in such a short, abbreviated fashion, even a little bit denigrating his father, saying, Avdecha Yishai, but in order to make this point that he didn't engage in this battle with intent to get anything out of it. Okay, Perek Yudches. Now, Perek Yudches, I don't know how much we'll get here. I plan to do the first four psukim, but I don't even know if I'll get that far. It's an amazing episode. I didn't see anybody really speak about it. Even the Medrash was silent. Look at this. Vaiti Chaloso, the Dabel Shol, he stops being the Shol. Poof! The Nefesh Yonason Nixua Benefesh David. The soul of Yonason became enwrapped in the soul of David. Vayave Yonason could have shown Yonason loved him like his own soul. They've never seen each other before. All of a sudden they become such tremendous, tremendous friends. What's going on here? How does this happen? Sight? Just by sight? They didn't talk philosophy, they didn't talk theology, they didn't go to a ball game together. What? But you know, they didn't have any contact. The real contact was here.
For him, he was
a tremendous hero. Yonason is no small fry himself, though. Yonason did a lot of brave things. Well, we don't know. It depends how literally take all the chazals about the age of David at the time. We don't know. First of all, we don't know how old Yonason is at all. I don't know how old David is. I can't say for sure. Why are we all four looking together? By Kochayu Shol, by Yomu Shol, took him down that day, took David on his own shoebase, so he said, would not let him go home. By Kochayu Yonatan, David priest, by Vosol, so can have Shol, and Yonatan and David made their own covenant, their own bridge, their own agreement, and out of his great love for David as his own soul. By Spashay Chaynason, Yonatan removed his Sami Yerasher Olav, the garment which was upon him. By Uneu David, he gave to David. Umadov, and his entire armor, Ad Charbo to his sword, Bar Kashto and his arrow and his bow, Bar Chagoro and his armored belt. What's going on here? What's happening? Very, very cryptic. Nobody describes it. So you think, okay, so they knew each other a little bit from before. Still, it's an unbelievable outpouring of love on the poor spur of the moment. Okay, maybe they had met him before, but I don't think it warrants all this. So what's happening here? So I choose, of course, to explain this all metaphysically, mystically. And if you take a look here again in my notes, we have to understand what's going on with Yoinah's son and with David on a mystical sense. And then Tzadik writes in Perkei Yikrim Yizayin, Varisho Minishmas Mashiach Ben Yosef, the first manifestation of Mashiach Ben Yosef in his Galah B'Olam Hazeh was revealed in this world. Kimetumeli, I believe, Shohaya Yoinah Ben Shol, was Yoinah the son of Shol. V'akein Ne'arak, that's why he's killed. V'loin Tzabo Shum Chet, despite the fact that he didn't commit any Avera. That cause of in the Torah, in the Tanakh, Shebishvilo Ne'arak, that for which he was killed. I'll explain that in a minute. And the Mashiach ben Yosef aspect was the source of his great love for David. Shammai said, Mi'avas, and he says later on, Mi'avas Noshim, that the love is greater than the love of man than to woman. Kiyom Zayim Sorayicha, because they are the secret of unity. The Chayim Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David, so to Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David, you will be train Rayim to friends, Glory Spashim, who cannot separate. Shalzeb Ramaz Anavi, Besima Shteit, and that's why the Navi and Rio made allusion later in history, by putting two world woods together to be the wood. Eight Yosef, eight Yehuda, Zayim said, the wood of Yehuda and the wood of Yosef. And if you take a look here in the Radak, it's a very amazing Radak here. The Radak says, one line, the Nevish Yonison, HaMesorah mean Reis Safar Rocha, the Mesorah from the beginning of the Sefer till now, always says Yonason without a Var, hey. Yonason, Var Mishnayim, except for two. But now from Matzav Erelim, by Yom Yonason, Yonason's first battle against the Plishtim, several parak or two ago. And from here until the end of the Sefer, it says Yonason. What do we see here again? The extra hay. The extra hay, which we had in Yoshia, is here also in Yonason. And it sticks from now on till the rest of the Sefer. We have to know, hay, as I said before, connotes completion in this world. All of my head is created with hay. A person reaches their complete madrega, a salvation is complete in this world, it's a hay. It's additional hay, completion, perfection. Yonason becomes perfected when he meets David. Because Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David come together. The purpose of Yosef and the purpose of David, ben Yamin here in this case, because Yonason is from Shei ben Yamin, but the same concept, is only completed when it comes together with David. And we will explain why in a few minutes. But I want to explain just on a tangent here, why is Mashiach ben Yosef killed? You know, the Mekubalim all were terribly, terribly bothered by the concept of Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David, which appears in Shas, and Mashiach ben Yosef having to die. Mashiach ben Yosef wages the battles of salvation, then he dies, and Mashiach ben David makes the final geula, the spiritual redemption. And the Gra said, it's been many years since I read this, but in Kol HaTzar, a work ascribed to the Gra, he spends pages and pages and pages talking about how he has to be mispalo, the Mashiach ben Yosef shouldn't die, and that he should survive, and that none of the tragedies which might befall him should befall him. And Rav Tzadik brings down that one in the Kabbalah, I forget which one. I want to say the Shlua, but I don't think so. One of them said, I don't think it works out time-wise. One of them said that Reb Hirshla Ostropoler was killed by the Cossacks, by Chomelinsky. He was Mashiach ben Yosef. And he was killed, he was an athlete of Mashiach ben Yosef, and he was killed. Very holy Makubo was killed by the Cossacks. And then later on, Mashiach ben Yosef, when he comes again, will not have to be killed. So they're all bothered by this concept of Mashiach ben Yosef having to be killed. And Reb Tzadik says, why is Mashiach ben Yosef to be killed? Mashiach ben Yosef is pure of all sin. Mashiach ben Yosef is the same concept as Eliyahu Navi. And in fact, they're a little bit interchangeable in Kabbalah. Mashiach ben Yosef comes as Mashiach ben David. Eliyahu comes as Mashiach ben David. There's a parallel role for both of them. Eliyahu, who of course will come to later in Tanakh, was considered to be pure of any desires. of an illicit nature. They had no taiva. And that's why he never had to die. Death is caused by taiva. Adam Arishon sinned with taiva, with lust, desire for the fruit. You desire something other than closest to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's death. Eliyahu, he wasn't more perfect than Avraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, and Moshe, but his characteristic was that he had no desires. He was a zealous man. In fact, some ascribe to say Pinchas and Eliyahu the same person, and he was a very, somewhat, perhaps even, we could say, had a temper, but he had no desire for anything other than closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A person has no need to die. Mashiach ben Yosef says that Tzadok also has no desire for anything. That's the power of Yosef. Restraint. They don't commit their desire to any worldly thing. Like Yosef restrained himself with the wife of Potiphar. Mashiach ben Yosef, though, is tainted by his contact with everybody else. Eliyahu had no contact with the common people. He ran away to the caves, to the mountains. He never was tainted, quote unquote. Mashiach ben Yosef, precisely because he has the work of the salvation, he comes into contact with others. So although he might not have an overt desire, overt taivas, he's been influenced thereby. So Mashiach ben Yosef, as holy as he is, has to be killed. Yonasan as well. Yonasan was perfect. He was the first predecessor, precursor of Mashiach ben Yosef in this world. Yet at the same time, he too must die because of his contact with the house of Shaul. It's true. It was a relatively minor blemish. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu medaktek him svivav kechut asayra. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was very, very meticulous with the people who surround him, his closest allies, so to speak. So therefore, Yonasan has to die as well. Now, Yonasan is only complete when he meets David. I won't have time to fully explain this tonight. We'll have to come back to it next week. But Yonasan is only complete when he meets David. And that completion, again, I'll come back to that next week, but that completion here is described time and time again with the word nefesh. The nefesh Yonasan nikshara b'nefesh David. Vayavei Yonasan kenafsho. And then again, Pasuk Gimel, Bavososo kenafsho. Why nefesh, nefesh, nefesh? So I got to thinking, you know, let's look up what is the word nefesh. Where is the word nefesh? What does it mean? So nefesh, of course, is, in one connotation means soul. What else does the word nefesh mean? No. It might mean it's related to the word nosaf, which means to exhale. But what else does it mean? What is nefesh? Where does it appear nefesh? Not in that exact form. Vayinafash. What does vayinafash mean? He rested. Things, it's a strange word. What does it mean, vayinafash, he rested? Like, kivoshavatzakom achtor shabro. No. Wrong pasuk. Vayamashi shabbat vayinafash. Right. So the Sfarnu says there, in Shmos Lamed Aviv Zayin, take a look here. At that point, the work was complete. And when the work was complete of creating the world, there's rest. In Shlemos, in perfection, there's rest. That's why the seventh day has a greater nefesh, neshami seira, vitosefes achana, which is an additional preparation. To attain that which God desired, when he completed his work in this world, he said, let us make man in our image, in our form. Vayinofash, the Sforno says, was chosen as the word to denote God's rest because it's linked to the concept of soul. With such a shlemus, with perfection reached on that Friday, on that Shabbos, the first Shabbos of creation, an additional Kedusha was given. When one reaches a level of completion, of perfection, in any one area of one's life, one ascends a level. And HaKadosh Baruch was telling us, the Vayinafash of Shabbos, it's not a Vayinafash of plain rest and relaxation, it's a Vayinafash of additional holiness, Neshami Seir, of additional perfection. And here's I normally don't look at Rav Sham Shapol Hirsch, not because of anything against him, I just never got used to it, but he says a beautiful thing there. He says there, Vayinofash, nefesh is the individuality, the individual personal creature. That's what nefesh means. So that hinafash, which is Vayinofash, means to withdraw into one's own personality, in contrast to working out at something external to oneself. So it also means resting from an exertion, literally coming to oneself. So besides the Sforno, who learns it imparts additional Kedusha, Neshama Yisera, an extra Nefesh. The Rabbi Hirsch learns that in part it means to come into oneself, to make oneself whole, almost to turn internally and focus on one's internal personality and character as opposed to working at things which are outside to oneself. And the truth is, it seems to me that this is my, he doesn't say this, but it seems to me that the word pasa means to expand. Right, pasa, hine pasa nega ba'or, the taras expanded in the skin. Nafash means to withdraw, the opposite, to stop. Pas, right, pas, modified by the hay, is to expand. Pas, modified by the nun, means to stop, which is interesting because hay is 5 and nun is 50, so there's some correlation there. But so I think that what it means here, in stressed over and over again at the beginning of this parak, is that the nefesh of Yonasan, his soul, his personality, was completed with David. What David represented to him was the completion of his soul. It worked both ways. I'm going to explain that next week. David got from Yonasan, and Yonasan got from David. They complemented each other. What Yonasan was lacking, what his nefesh was lacking, that he could have the concept of vaynafash, a completion of self, an uplifting of self, and being able to fully develop his own personality, that he got from David. And David will get that which he is missing from Yonasan. So that's why the two of them had such a relationship. And I think that, again, this explains, a little bit at least, why all of a sudden this tremendous tug. It's as if each person saw in the other, not as if, each person saw and sensed in the other person what they were lacking to become the complete Oved Hashem, to complete the complete paragon and complete personality which through which they were supposed to become, and that's what they get from each other. All right, I haven't told you what that is, but I'll give you a hint, which is real, which is that Yonasan represents Yiras Hashem, and he gives that to David, and that is going to be the connotation of Pasuk Dalet. Pretty neat, so I'll tell you next week. And David represents Avas Hashem, and that's what David gives back to Yonasan, and I'll discuss that again, as I say, next time.